Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Today could be the last day of the FBI investigation into allegations of sexual assault brought against Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh. Three women have come forward to accuse him of sexual assault. According to reports, the scope of the investigation is very limited. Julie Swetnick's allegations may not be within the scope, and the FBI has also reportedly been told not to investigate discrepancies between Kavanaugh's description of his drinking in college and high school and accounts from his former roommates and acquaintances who describe him as frequently, excessively, and belligerently drunk. According to reports from NBC, more than 40 people with potential information about the allegations have not been contacted by the FBI. Dr. Christine Blasey Ford's lawyers say the FBI have not responded to a letter sent on Tuesday. She has not spoken to the FBI. To talk about the latest about this investigation, and we'll also talk about Mitch McConnell. He says he's going forward with the votes in the coming days. Does he have the votes? Michael Stern is an attorney with 30 years of experience as a litigator, 25 years as a federal prosecutor for the United States Department of Justice, and he spent 3 years as an assistant district attorney. Michael Stern joins us from Culver City. Hi, Michael. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us. And we're joined by Lee Goodmark, a law professor at the University of Maryland School of Law, an anti-violence advocate, and author of Decriminalizing Domestic Violence, A Balanced Policy Approach to Intimate Partner Violence. Hi, Lee. Welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, we keep learning new things, it seems, by the hour. And Michael, you wrote an op-ed for USA Today called Let the FBI Do Its Job. We're now learning, according to NBC, that potentially more than 40 people with information about the allegations have not been contacted by the FBI. So when you say let the FBI do its job, depending on who you ask, that's a very different job. What do you mean by it?
Well, from a prosecutor's perspective, what I mean is that the issues that were raised during the course of the Senate Judiciary hearings last Thursday need to be investigated. And the issues were broad. They related to the actual allegation of sexual assault, but also, and importantly, they related to allegations and belief that Judge Kavanaugh was not being honest and forthright when he answered questions about a variety of issues related to his past, including drinking and comments that were made in a yearbook. And so my perspective, as I said, as a prosecutor, is to let the FBI investigate anything and everything that might impact his fitness for a position on the United States Supreme Court.
Lee, what would you add?
I think that's entirely accurate. It's mystifying to me, actually, that when Judge Kavanaugh's credibility is so at issue as to the extent of his drinking, the amount of his drinking, the impact of his drinking, that all of these witnesses who have seen him engage in that behavior and have important information to share aren't being talked to. In addition, that Dr. Ford, that Ms. Ramirez haven't been talked to, which even if you had a very narrow investigation would seem to me to be the essential components of the investigation, is just appalling.
And let me jump in here. That's absolutely correct. As a prosecutor, the first thing that you would direct the FBI to do would be to interview the victim, Christine Blasey Ford. So the idea that the FBI has been directed not to interview the actual victim that comprises the main issue that was raised during the course of the hearing is mystifying only if you're looking at things from a non-cynical perspective. But if you're looking at things from the perspective of the White House and the Republican-led Senate Judiciary Committee want to ensure that Judge Kavanaugh makes his way to the Supreme Court, unfortunately, it's not mystifying at all, but it's understandable why they are limiting the FBI in the way that they are.
Michael, do we know who at the FBI is actually conducting this investigation and who's really involved in this?
I don't know the exact people that have been assigned, but typically what happens is when an investigation is taking place, there will be one person who is assigned as the lead agent. And then from that, there will be a series of other agents that work the case as well. And the one of the points that I made in the op-ed that I wrote was that a lot of people said that it may not be sufficient time for the FBI to do a thorough investigation in a week. But my response then, and my response is now, if you assign enough agents, the FBI can do what they likely need to do during the course of the week. Whether or not they've been assigned enough agents or not, I don't know. But I think the bigger concern is that it doesn't appear that the FBI is running the investigation as they would typically run an investigation, which would be to turn over every stone and find all the pieces of information that might be relevant. Instead, what appears to be happening is that the White House is tying the FBI's hands and limiting what they can do in the investigation. And that, I believe, is designed to affect the outcome of the investigation.
Lee, what would you add on that point? Because on one hand, we heard that it was going to be a very limited investigation, and then Trump tweets and says the FBI can interview whoever they want. And now we hear from Dr. Christine Blasey Ford's lawyers that she hasn't been contacted by the FBI. So who's really making these decisions?
Yeah, I think it's impossible to know that with any certainty. Certainly not talking to Dr. Ford makes it a very limited investigation indeed. It's hard to follow Mr. Trump's tweets and have any idea of which way the government is going. Certainly, it's an inappropriate way to be directing an FBI investigation. And so it seems as though the Republican Senate and the Republican Senate Judiciary Committee members, as well as the Republican in the White House, are really trying to keep a very tight rein on the investigation. I think Rachel Mitchell's memo, is indicative of the same kind of problem in that it talks only about Dr. Ford's testimony and not about Judge Kavanaugh's testimony, which is really what's at issue. Dr. Ford's truthfulness or lack of truthfulness isn't the only issue here. Judge Kavanaugh's credibility, Judge Kavanaugh's judicial demeanor, those things are at issue as well. And so it seems to me that any investigation that is thorough would have to inquire into the places where he has been possibly less than truthful with the committee. And certainly his drinking history is part of that.
Well, can we talk specifically about the drinking? Because a number of his classmates have come forward. Some of them have published op-eds in the New York Times, or at least lengthy statements in the New York Times, and have said that they were often drinking with Brett Kavanaugh to the point where they were belligerent. And so what about that piece of information? Because on one hand, you have people like Senator Jeff Flake telling 60 Minutes that if Kavanaugh lied, then there's no way he could vote for him. But now I'm just looking at a tweet from Manu Raju, a senior congressional correspondent with CNN. And about 40 minutes ago, he tweeted, "Flake just told me Trump's comments." Well, we'll talk about that in a minute. That's a whole other story. But Flake doesn't seem to be interested in an FBI probe about whether Kavanaugh lied to Congress about drinking. He said the probe is focused on what happened to Ford. He said he has no concerns if Ford not interviewed. He said there can't be a cloture vote Friday if no report is filed by then. So just what about that focus on the drinking, Michael? How should the FBI deal with that? Because based on former classmates, Kavanaugh lied about it.
So here's my perspective as a prosecutor on the drinking. I don't think that someone who, as a teenager, even if it went into his early years in college, who drank a lot at parties, should be disqualified from being on the Supreme Court. But that is distinctly different than saying that someone should be able to make their way to the Supreme Court if they have lied about their drinking. These are two very different things, and it is my perception and belief, and I think the belief of most people who have a tempered view of these things, that you should not have a member of the Supreme Court who is a liar. And it appears from the testimony that Judge Kavanaugh gave last Thursday that he portrayed a view of himself that's vastly different than the view that's been portrayed by a lot of people who know him and who were participants in what was going on in his early adulthood. And that's the real danger. So I think it is wrong for the FBI not to be investigating those things. And I think that we can assume that if someone lies about something small that they don't need to lie about, that in fact they might lie about more substantive things. And I think there's evidence of that related to Judge Kavanaugh, because there have been a lot of questions that have been raised about whether or not he was truthful related to testimony he gave in earlier proceedings when he was getting nominated for and being vetted for his judgeship on the D.C. Circuit. Substantive things like whether or not he was involved in advising the Bush administration on issues of torture and warrantless wiretapping and several other judges who were making their way through the nomination process, and also whether or not he was aware of the fact that he received emails that had been stolen back in, I think, 2003 from members of the Democratic committee that was involved in vetting judges that were stolen by a Republican aide.
Mm. And Lee, what are your thoughts about the drinking and basically his former classmates saying that he lied about it?
So if drinking too much at Yale as a teenager is a disqualifying characteristic, then I am disqualified from the Supreme Court, and so are many of my friends. I started at Yale the fall after Judge Kavanaugh graduated. I know what that culture was like, and I don't have an issue particularly with the fact that as a young man he may have had way too much to drink. My issue is with, as Michael said, the lying about it. It's clear from his yearbook, it's clear from other people's testimony, that Judge Kavanaugh drank an enormous amount as a young man. It's possible that Judge Kavanaugh drank so much that he does not recall the events that Dr. Ford is describing. The fact that he has not owned responsibility for the things that he has done, the fact that he diminishes what he has done and denies engaging in this behavior is what is so problematic, and it is part and parcel of a pattern, as Michael said, of distorting the truth or using what I saw called lawyerly tricks to not answer questions in a clear and forthright manner. And I think what's so interesting about the process right now is that it's really been made about Dr. Ford's credibility, and Dr. Ford's credibility is not the thing we should care about the most. Mm. What we should care about the most is the honesty, the veracity, and the judicial temperament of Judge Kavanaugh.
And let me just jump in there. Lee's absolutely right. It is possible, and people need to think about this possibility, that what Dr. Ford said happened did in fact happen, and that Judge Kavanaugh, Brett Kavanaugh, was too drunk to remember what he actually did. And so not only do the statements that Kavanaugh has made about his drinking impact whether or not he's believable or credible enough to be on the Supreme Court, but it could very well be that it would have a direct impact on his position with respect to whether or not he committed the sexual assault that Dr. Ford accuses him of committing. He may have done it, but simply didn't remember it because he was too blackout drunk to remember what was happening.
Right. So what about that question? As far as I can remember, I don't think any of the senators asked about that. Senator Klobuchar got close to that, but I don't think anyone specifically said, have you been drunk to the point where you don't remember what you did? And is this something?
I think Senator Klobuchar asked that exact question, and that was the question that he responded to by saying, well, have you? Which showed an enormous amount of disdain, I thought, for the Senate, for the institution of the Senate, which again is troubling in somebody who is called on to rule on the separation of powers between the various branches.
Hmm. Because she talked about blacking out, which I guess is the same thing as not remembering, right?
That's how I would define it.
Right. So then, okay, so that was a very short question, and it would have been nice if there was a longer exchange. So in this case, what could the FBI do, Michael, especially on this question? Did you get so drunk that you didn't remember what you did?
Well, one of the things that they should be doing is they should be talking to Brett Kavanaugh, and they've decided not to do that either. And so, again, it shows it's an additional piece in a puzzle that when you look at the broader picture makes clear that the FBI is being directed by the White House and probably the Senate Judiciary Committee to limit what they're doing. But they should ask Brett Kavanaugh more detailed questions that he may feel comfortable telling them in the privacy of an interview that's not being publicly broadcast. And he may ultimately, in that type of setting, admit that, in fact, there were times that he was blackout drunk. And that would in some ways allow the the circumstance that was described by Dr. Ford to be juxtaposed over the possibility that Kavanaugh was too drunk to remember it. And it may, in fact, resolve some of the issues that I think that we've been trying to figure out based on these hearings.
So, Lee, how could this even be a, quote, credible investigation if the FBI is not talking to Brett Kavanaugh or Dr. Christine Blasey Ford?
It's not. I mean, that's really the short answer, is it's not a credible investigation. When folks advocated for an investigation, what they were advocating for was for a neutral body to go in and really look at the accounts of the various people who were there that night or could have been there that night, and people with information that tended to show that what was being alleged was either more or less likely to be true. By not talking to the victims in the case, and I include Ms. Ramirez in that as well, because those allegations are still out there, by not talking to Dr. Ford, by not talking to Judge Kavanaugh, not talking to the 40 people who have called in, I think that's really problematic. If they're only going to talk to four people whose statements denying anything are already on the record, that's not the kind of investigation that anyone asked for. And I think it's worth noting that at least one of those people, and really the most important witness, Mark Judge, is someone who talks about having blacked out drunk more times than he could count in his memoirs. That's something that he's acknowledged, that he's taken some kind of accountability for. And so it's impossible, I think, to think that we're ever going to get the full story of what happened that night. But by not talking to many of the major players, we're not even going to get a percentage of that story.
And again, go ahead, Michael.
Let me just jump in on that point, because I think it's an important point. And the corollary to that point is that there is a danger that I think is created by the perception that the FBI does what they typically do, which is a thorough investigation, but not having that be the reality. And so I think it is more problematic and more dangerous for the FBI to have been assigned to do an investigation and for the public to believe that an investigation occurred, but for the FBI to be hand-tied in the investigation that they're doing. And the reason that I think that's especially dangerous is because it then makes the FBI, by being limited in the way the White House is limiting them, do a superficial investigation in which they appear on the surface to have done something of substance, but really the investigation, because they've been so limited, the investigation is skin deep. And I think that the corresponding danger to that is it allows the Republican Senate Judiciary Committee and the president to announce to the public at large, we did the investigation that the Democrats want. The FBI investigated, and they didn't find anything. And so what happens then is that the idea that the FBI investigated is left out there without a full understanding that the FBI didn't do the type of investigation that they would. And I think that that's going to potentially result, or likely result, actually, in Brett Kavanaugh making his way to the Supreme Court. And by limiting the FBI investigation to a superficial one, the Republican majority will be able to say, we did what you want, so quit complaining. And that's a danger.
Michael Stern is attorney and is an attorney with 30 years of experience as a litigator and 25 years as a federal prosecutor for the U.S. Department of Justice. He also spent 3 years as an assistant district attorney. Lee Goodmark is a law professor at the University of Maryland School of Law, an anti-violence advocate, and author of the book Decriminalizing Domestic Violence, A Balanced Policy Approach to Intimate Partner Violence. And on today's Your Call, we are talking about, well, what do we call it? An FBI investigation, or an FBI investigation that's not really an investigation because the FBI is not talking to Brett Kavanaugh or Dr. Christine Blasey Ford. If you have any questions or comments about this process, there's a lot of moving parts. You can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Lee, what about the fact that earlier this year, I mean, Donald Trump went on Twitter and just ripped the FBI. I mean, he appointed Christopher Wray to head the FBI after he fired James Comey. I mean, I was just looking up one of them, and here's one from February. You know, the top leadership and investigators of the FBI and the DOJ have politicized the sacred investigative process in favor of Democrats and against Republicans. What is his relationship like today with the FBI? Do you know?
I would imagine that it's fraught. I don't know any more than I think anyone else knows from reading both the tweets of the president and some of the tweets and other information that have come out from other branches of the executive. But you can't talk about people like that who take an enormous amount of pride in the work that they do and in the service that they provide to the country and think that there'll be no impact. Apparently in this day and age, the president can say that today, and tomorrow I agree with Michael. What he will say is, you asked for the FBI. The FBI is the best law enforcement body in the world. They did a thorough investigation. They found nothing, and therefore we should all be okay with Judge Kavanaugh assuming a seat on the Supreme Court. I don't think the president is consistent about anything from day to day. I don't expect this to be any different, but I also don't expect that to improve his relationship with the FBI. These are people who put their life on the line quite literally. I mean, in a world in which we use the word hero a lot for a lot of different things, these are people who really do risk their lives, their safety, to try to keep this country safe and to try to do the kind of good law enforcement work that the federal prosecution system depends upon, and to trash them time and time again, it can't be good for that relationship.
Well, the other question is, what is going to be done with this report? Because senators are talking about and disagreeing about whether or not the report, when it's completed, will be available to the public. Dianne Feinstein says it should be kept confidential. Lindsey Graham said it should be made public. Mitch McConnell said it would not be. Chuck Schumer said it should be released. I mean, what about this, Michael? How are these decisions going to be made? How will the public know what was actually found?
Well, my assumption is that the White House and that the Senate Judiciary Committee will make a decision as to whether or not they want to release the report in whole to the public. My belief is that it will probably not be released to the public, but instead what will happen is that each side will pick out select portions that they think support their position, and they will talk about those portions as talking points to either complain that the FBI didn't do a sufficiently thorough investigation and that Brett Kavanaugh should not be confirmed at the Supreme Court, or alternatively from the Republican side saying, look, the FBI did what you asked them to do. They didn't find anything of substance. He needs to go to the Supreme Court.
Lee, what do you think?
I would agree with all that, except that I think it will leak. And so whether they choose to handle it publicly or not, at some point I think all of the contents of that document will be known to all of us. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I think that Lee's right. I think it will leak, and the problem with the leak is going to be that the public will then read the report and not think of the fact that the FBI was hand-tied when they conducted it. So what they will see is potentially a complete report from paper to paper and page to page, but not understand that this is not how a typical FBI investigation should have taken place, and that had the FBI been given free rein to do the type of thing that they do, the report would be very different than it's ultimately going to be.
And I think that's true of Rachel Mitchell's memo as well, that you know, Rachel Mitchell's memo is all about Dr. Ford, and pulling apart Dr. Ford's testimony is nothing about Judge Kavanaugh. It provides no context. It provides no other side. And the leaking of that memo has made it look as though there is no reasonable grounds to believe that Dr. Ford could be telling the truth, because there is nothing in it about Judge Kavanaugh's testimony. It's a powerful document for those who want to say Dr. Ford is a liar, she's being motivated by Democratic operatives, as the memo says. And I agree with Michael. I think it's very possible that that report will be used in the same way.
Well, we'll talk more about that memo in case listeners don't know about that specific memo. Rachel Mitchell is the sex crimes prosecutor that was hired by Chuck Grassley to question Dr. Christine Blasey Ford in place of Republican senators. She was supposed to also question Brett Kavanaugh, but it was pretty obvious that the Republican senators were not happy with the way she was questioning him. And so then that's when Lindsey Graham kind of went off on his tirade. Michael Stern is an attorney with 30 years of experience as a litigator and 25 years as a federal prosecutor for the U.S. Department of Justice. Lee Goodmark is a law professor at the University of Maryland School of Law, an anti-violence advocate, and author of the book Decriminalizing Domestic Violence, A Balanced Policy Approach to Intimate Partner Violence. This is Your Call, and we'll be back after this.
This is Your Call on Local Public Radio, KALW. There are many ways you can take part in the conversation on the phone, by sending an email to yourcall@klw.org, or by going to the yourcallradio.org website. If you'd like to participate in today's show by phone, call toll-free 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK. You can also tweet us at Your Call Radio. It's Wednesday, so that means a second hour of Your Call, focusing on the midterm elections, with Rose Aguilar coming up at 11. Stay with us if you can. On your smart speaker, say, play KALW.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will talk about the hundreds of thousands of untested rape kits that are sitting in police and crime lab storage facilities across the country. We will talk about why this is still happening and how far we have come in prosecuting cases where there's not only a report but actual evidence. And then on our media roundtable on Friday, it has been 17 years since the U.S. invaded Afghanistan. We will talk about what is happening on the ground in Afghanistan. We'll also talk about how much this ongoing war is costing, and we'll talk about the recent military spending bill that just passed overwhelmingly by the House and the Senate. Today, we are talking about what the FBI is looking at and is not looking at. The FBI has not talked to Brett Kavanaugh. The FBI has not talked to Dr. Christine Blasey Ford. Today we're joined by Lee Goodmark, a law professor at the University of Maryland School of Law, an anti-violence advocate and author of Decriminalizing Domestic Violence. Michael Stern is an attorney with 30 years of experience as a litigator and 25 years as a federal prosecutor for the U.S. Department of Justice. He also spent 3 years as an assistant district attorney. Since you've been bringing up Rachel Mitchell, Ali, for those who haven't been following this part of it, again, Rachel Mitchell was hired by Chuck Grassley to basically step in for Republican senators, all men, to question Dr. Christine Blasey Ford. She was questioning Brett Kavanaugh in the beginning, but then you had Lindsey Graham step in and really start yelling about the process. So she wrote a memo to the committee outlining 9 main points she says raises questions about Ford's credibility. And she said no prosecutor would bring the case. Why do you see this as problematic?
For a number of different reasons, actually. So first, that Ms. Mitchell is a sex crimes prosecutor and that she has to have some kind of rapport with the victims with whom she works, I think is incredibly endangered at this point. If I were a victim in Maricopa County, Arizona, there's no way that I would want her investigating or prosecuting my case. I think she set her cause back significantly. In terms of the memo itself, It's nitpicking of the kind that victim advocates have been fighting against for the last 40 years, and that advances in the science of memory and trauma have taught us is really problematic. And so if you go through, it's funny because in the memo she says, well, I understand that delayed disclosure of abuse is common or memory loss is common, and then goes on to just nitpick at the really most minor discrepancies between different accounts. So for example, in one account, Dr. Ford said it happened in my late teens. Another time she said 15. I really don't think that's a significant enough difference to say that this is something that discredits Dr. Ford's story. Similarly, she talks a lot about the inability to remember certain details. Well, memory research and memory science tells us that when we experience trauma, memory is impacted, that the brain tends to foreground the most vivid or important parts of a story, might not retain as much about the more peripheral parts of a story. To me, it's not the least bit surprising, having done this work for 25 years, that Dr. Ford remembers the assault itself, but not how she got home. But the way in which this is presented makes it look as though Dr. Ford is lying, that she was inconsistent, for example. And some of the things about which she was inconsistent, I think, are just frankly that she said to have been inconsistent, are frankly ridiculous. So the heading, for example, says, Dr. Ford has struggled to identify Judge Kavanaugh as the assailant by name. And the justification for that is that his name doesn't appear in her marriage therapy or individual therapy notes. That's not struggling. That's just not telling. And it's consistent with what Dr. Ford said about the fact that she did not want to disclose who had done this to her. I have said several times now, I wish I thought that the Democrats on the committee had so much foresight and were so well organized that years and years ago they went to Dr. Ford and said, start dropping little hints of evidence now because we think Brett Kavanaugh will be nominated for the Supreme Court in 2018 and we'll need you to come back and pick all those things up. It's just ridiculous to look at this, to look at this information in the way that Mitchell has looked at it and to poke holes in it in the way that she has done. There may be legitimate differences in the stories that people are telling, but Mitchell has done just a tremendous disservice to the anti-violence work that we've really been, you know, struggling to get judges and others to understand for years and years. If you look at the way that police work on sexual violence cases, if you look at the way that judges approach sexual violence cases, many of the same misconceptions that they bring to those cases you see in the Mitchell memo, and that to me is a tragedy.
Can I jump in here?
Sure.
So before I worked for the Department of Justice as a federal prosecutor, as you said, I was a state prosecutor, and one of the types of cases that I handled were cases of sexual assault. So I've dealt directly with victims who have been attacked and sexually assaulted. And what Lee is saying is absolutely correct. And when I read Rachel Mitchell's memo, it curled my toes. From the perspective of a prosecutor, she has done so much damage, not only to undercut her own credibility, but she did what no prosecutor should do. She attempted to discredit the account of a sexual assault by a woman who was victimized. And that's just unforgivable in so many ways. And what is most concerning is that she made a series of categories, as Lee mentioned, that she said supported her position that the charges were, that there would be no charges that a reasonable prosecutor would bring. But what she neglected to mention and what is of paramount importance is that no investigation by any law enforcement agency has ever been done into the allegations that were made by Christine Blasey Ford because they were just raised a few weeks ago when the letter that she sent to Dianne Feinstein was released. And in the memo that Mitchell has written, she tries to take something that is innocuous and make something out of it to discredit Dr. Ford. So, for instance, one of the things that she said was that Dr. Ford changed her story because on one occasion she described the event as a sexual assault. And on another occasion, she described the event as physical abuse. That would be like me saying on one occasion, I'm going to go home, and on another occasion saying, I'm going to go to my house, and then having a prosecutor say, well, how can we believe you once you said you were going to go home and once you said you were going to go to your house? These things are innocuous distinctions that she's making that are in many ways simply meaningless. It's sort of like an 80-year-old woman walking into her hairstylist with a torn magazine picture of Farrah Fawcett and handing it to her and saying, make me look like this. Take my three wisps of white hair and make me look like Farrah Fawcett. And that's sort of what Rachel Mitchell tried to do. She tried to take a handful of innocuous, meaningless things and whip them together into something that they simply cannot be. And both in the metaphor that I just used and in Mitchell's report, it's pretty easy to see the holes.
We have a caller who couldn't stay on who said, why do they focus so much on Kavanaugh telling the truth? I'm thinking that this encounter, while horrific for Dr. Ford, was kind of insignificant to Kavanaugh. The person who raped me, says our caller, when I was 12, doesn't even remember. What if Kavanaugh just doesn't recall it? Lee?
So first, if the caller is still listening, I just want to say I'm so sorry for what you experienced and that you have to re-raise your trauma now to answer this question. I think it may be that he doesn't remember it. And if he had come forward and said, you know, as a young man, I drank a lot. I drank too much. I don't remember everything that I did. It's possible that I did something that harmed someone. And if I did, I am unbelievably sorry for that. And here are all the things that I have done as an adult to overcome that, right? And talked about his basketball teams and the women law clerks and all of these other things. And if he had said that, nobody would be questioning his honesty at this point, right? Nobody would be saying, well, he's lying about how much he drank, and he's lying about how belligerent he was. He's lying about his anger, which, you know, if you hear accounts of these incidents, it makes you wonder, does this person have the judicial temperament that's necessary to be on the bench? So I'm not so interested in his memory in so much as it proves or disproves what happened to Dr. Ford. I believe Dr. Ford. I believe her account of events, and I believe that Brett Kavanaugh did what she described him doing. But as to Judge Kavanaugh and why he is or isn't fit to be on the Supreme Court, I can't say that everything that somebody does as a teenager should disqualify them for the rest of their lives. What I can say is that if you lie about those things, if you fail to talk about the full extent of your responsibility for those things, then you are not fit to be on the court.
Well, I just want to thank you so much, if you're still listening, for calling and sharing your story. I mean, last week, during the hearing, we broke in and just opened the lines, and it was just caller after caller after caller who talked about being sexually assaulted. Many were sharing their stories for the very first time. And I want to just give out the National Sexual Assault Hotline. It's 800-656-4673, 800-656-4673. And during that show, which you can find at yourcallradio.org, we also talked about various therapists and clinics that have sliding scales. So if you're looking for any sort of help or therapy, hopefully you can listen to that show. We also have links, yourcallradio.org. Let's hear from Kathleen in San Francisco. Hi, Kathleen. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Yeah, it seems so obvious that unfortunately FBI is being hamstrung. And the thing I don't understand is Trump just changed his tune utterly and said that they could interview anybody they wanted. He wanted it to be as full as possible and so forth and so on, which is totally weird for him to say that. But if he said that, why can't they then go ahead and have a free and open investigation?
Well, we've been talking about that, Kathleen, and unfortunately, this is a guy who changes his tune, you know, every couple hours in some cases. I mean, we haven't even talked about how he mocked Christine Blasey Ford just yesterday on the campaign trail. But let me take a couple more calls, and then we'll get responses. Let's go to Terry in Palo Alto. Hi, Terry.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I agree that what people do in high school is, in some ways, past history, and the lying about her truthfulness is important. But the piece that really hasn't come out here is that there is no blackout drinking from light alcohol consumption or what some people call social or recreational drinking. Blackout drinking occurs when there's organic changes happening in the brain from regular, ongoing, heavy drinking. And it's really inconsistent with a report of high school age drinking. There's very, very few kids or adolescents that have that level of organic change. And that's partly why I think we should be concerned with his drinking, because if he did drink heavily and people are going to dismiss this as, oh, he was having a blackout, we have another problem on our hands. We have someone who, in fact, may be a very heavy drinker and now being put into a judicial position in the highest court. That's my comment.
Well, thank you, Terry. We'll get a response in just a few minutes. Let's first go to Greg in Palo Alto. Hi, Greg.
Hello. I hope there's not too much feedback. I'm sorry about that.
I think you're fine.
A couple of things. One is clearly the Democrats and Trump don't want a thorough investigation. That's clear. The extremes that they're willing to go to get this man on the Supreme Court is really unbelievable. It just reminds me of the Clarence Thomas and Anita Hill stuff. I would just want to make two more comments real quickly. One is that the report that this lawyer, Mitchell, from Arizona put out, she's claiming that she wouldn't prosecute this. I think that was what I heard when I listened to the news the other night. And this isn't a prosecution. That's not her position. She was supposed to get information, not make a determination. Ford's not on trial. So that's one thing. The other thing is, I watched the Frontline report last night about the Comey stuff. And it's clear to me why Trump wants this guy on the court. I don't think it has anything to do with Roe v. Wade, et cetera. He wants, if the Mueller investigation ever ends up in front of the Supreme Court, Trump wants to know that this guy is going to, you know, to use the colloquial, have his back. He wants somebody on there that he can depend on, because I think Mueller is really getting closer and closer really nailing Trump. And I'd love to hear your guest comment.
Well, thank you. Politico had a piece called Brett Kavanaugh's Radical View of Executive Power. Trump Supreme Court nominee threatens to undermine the Mueller probe. Who would like to take that one?
I'm happy to jump in. Brett Kavanaugh is known to have and has published information, published articles, and took a position, particularly during the Clinton years when he was part of the Ken Starr investigation against Clinton, indicating that there is broad presidential power to avoid being prosecuted during the course of a presidency that's in play. And that obviously would be very helpful to Donald Trump if Robert Mueller wanted to bring an indictment.
Anything to add, Lee?
Not as to that. I did want to go back to the point you made about the mocking of Dr. Ford. Because in her testimony, one of the things that Dr. Ford said was, the worst thing that I can imagine is having this all become public, turn my life upside down, and nothing happens. And in some ways, this is worse, right? Because not only did nothing happen, she now has the leader of the free world talking about how not credible that she is. And what I hope is that Dr. Ford is hearing the messages from people across the country saying, what you did mattered because all of those people are now coming forward to report, and all of those people are empowered by what you did. I think it'd be very easy for Dr. Ford to look at this process and think to herself, why in the world would I, did I ever open my mouth? And it's easy, I think, for other people to look at it and think, I'm never going to say anything to anyone if this is what that brings on. And for those people who really need to reach out to other people, I hope that's not the message that they take.
Right.
In so many ways, the election of President Trump has set back the anti-violence cause, the allegations against the president himself, the way that he's dealt with allegations about those on his staff, the way that he appoints people who've been accused of intimate partner violence, and now the way that he's mocked Dr. Ford. It's important that we remember that this is just a moment in time, and that kind of keeping the progress that we've made on anti-violence work, continuing to help people understand the impact of memory, the impact of trauma, and what resources are available to them, even if they choose not to go through the criminal system, which I think is a huge part of this. You know, Dr. Ford didn't choose to go to police, and that should not then result in no one believing her, and it shouldn't result in that for other people either.
And
can I...
Sure, go ahead, Michael.
One of the other things that I think... you know, is tangential to what Lee is saying is that what Donald Trump has done and the movement that he is creating in which Judge Kavanaugh, which Brett Kavanaugh has somehow been maneuvered into the place of a victim, and Christine Ford, the actual victim, has somehow been recast as the perpetrator, accusing a man who didn't do anything of doing something, is especially dangerous for the idea that you know, that women need to come forward and identify when they've been sexually assaulted. And this is a phenomenon that I used to see in a much smaller scale when I prosecuted sex crimes cases. What would happen is the man who was accused of committing the crime would attack the victim and somehow maneuver her into the role of the perpetrator. And it's happening again. I'm seeing it again on a larger scale. So yesterday, what Donald Trump said was how awful it was that anyone could be accused of anything, even if they're not guilty. And then he followed that up with a comment to the public that people should think about how this could be happening to their sons and how this could be happening to their husbands. It is especially dangerous to allow a sexual assailant to maneuver himself into the role of the victim and make it appear as though the person who's actually the victim is doing something wrong by bringing charges forth.
Well, it seems to be that this is the talking point because Trump's son has said this. The conservative talking heads are now repeating this, that this is a very dangerous time for boys and men in this country. Lee, I think this is really important. How do you think the media should deal with all of this? Because, I mean, they're playing Trump mocking Ford on a loop over and over again on the cable shows. And now we're just hearing constantly that the boys and the men of this country have to really be afraid, because you're now guilty until you're proven innocent. How should the media, I mean, this is so sensitive. I mean, like I said last week, so many people for the first time shared their stories on our show. I mean, people who've held this in for decades. So how should the media deal with all of this?
So I think the media needs to be measured And I think the media needs to hold people to account for the things that they say. So when we talk about how all men and all boys need to be afraid, the statistics, the evidence shows us that very few women actually make false claims of violence, that people who are making claims of violence are by and large telling the truth. That information needs to be out in the media. We need to tie this to the other things that the Trump administration is doing to dismantle all of the systems that we've created mm-hmm. to try to ensure that people are safe, right? The failure to reenact VAWA, and VAWA is now kind of on hold, the Violence Against Women Act. The way that Betsy DeVos is dismantling the Title IX protections that have been created for campus sexual assault, all of this is of a piece. The media needs to make those connections for people. So rather than just playing Trump and playing Trump and playing Trump, the media needs to call people on these allegations that they're making and show that they're faulty and use the evidence that's out there to help help people understand that people can say whatever they want, but here's what the evidence shows, that people don't generally make false allegations, that there are real consequences for people to coming forward with these allegations, that there is help that is available for them, that memos like the Mitchell memo are really just patent garbage. And it's hard for me to be measured particularly about that because I think she has a profound responsibility that she has completely abdicated. Yeah. But to take the science that's out there and say, you know, she says this, but here's what the science tells us about this. And then to get away from the easy soundbite of Trump saying over and over again what he's saying and actually hear from survivors and let them talk about why it was that they didn't come forward and create some space for those stories to come forward so that we can change the norms around violence and so that we can help people understand why, right. You know, why people are making the choices that they're making about not coming forward generally and about coming forward now.
Mm. Michael, what would you add?
I agree with all of those things. It's unfortunate, though, that I don't think that the press is going to let go of the soundbite because people watch it. It's something that they can see very quickly. It's something that they can understand. And it really plays to the fears, I think, of a lot of people that they could be unjustly accused of being involved in a sexual assault. As Lee said, factually, it just doesn't happen very often. But I think that Trump is doing a huge disservice in setting the movement of encouraging women who have been assaulted to come forward back decades by trying to play to the fear, you know, that anyone, your sons or your husband, could be accused of something that they didn't do. It's really awful.
Wow. Well, thank you for that call. Let's go next to Rick in Oakland. Hi, Rick. Welcome to the show.
Hi. What a terrific show, and I think you've covered so many points. I want to touch on something about drinking and alcohol and alcoholism that hasn't really been brought out because I think we do a disservice to people who are struggling with alcohol.
Rick, can you turn your radio down?
Oh, I thought it was off, actually.
Oh, okay. You're much better now. Go ahead.
Okay. So, you know, the first step of AA says, you know, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. And another step says we admitted to ourselves and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. And those who grapple with their own alcoholism and its effects on others, they really deserve our respect and admiration. But on the other hand, if substance abuse is unacknowledged, you know, a lot of studies show this, it can also put a person in a state of perpetual denial with lying to others, even compulsive lying as a byproduct. So I think that needs to be held in people's minds when they judge Judge Kavanaugh. And I do agree that his behavior today is really what is at issue. The other point that's related to that, and everything that's been discussed on this program and in the papers for the last week, really what's going to turn is if thinking and feeling people, senators, can see through the mirage of what's going on in this supposed FBI investigation, and that there may be 51 senators out of 100 that cannot see what to me is as clear as day to any thinking, feeling fellow human being is beyond my comprehension. Mm. So aren't we looking at the Flake, Murkowski, Collins, and all the other senators and what they see is going on in this past week as really the deciding factor?
Can I respond to that briefly? I understand all of your points, and I agree with all except one. I don't think that it is the senators who are supporting Judge Kavanaugh's rise to the Supreme Court as being unable or that they don't understand what was going on. I think that they've made a calculated political decision that it is important to the Republican Party and to the president that they get someone on the Supreme Court who will tip the scale to a very conservative Supreme Court. And so I think that because that is paramount in what is important to them, they are willing to do what they need to do in order to accomplish it. And that isn't the same thing as thinking that they don't understand the very serious and substantial flaws that exist in Judge Kavanaugh as a Supreme Court nominee.
Well, Rick, thank you for calling in. Charlie, sorry we don't have time to take your call, but Charlie's question is, how should citizens respond if Kavanaugh is confirmed despite all of this? Lee, what are your thoughts?
Vote. I mean, you know, part of the problem is that they won, those who are upset about the other side. You know, the Republicans won the election, and with that, that means they get to nominate Supreme Court justices, and if they have a majority in the Senate, their Supreme Court justices will be confirmed. If you have issues with the way that all of this has happened, if you have issues with the jurisprudence of the people who are coming before the court, if you have issues with the failure to recognize how problematic this particular nomination is, then you have to vote. There's new stuff coming out along the wire right now saying McConnell says the vote could happen at any time, and not just on Friday, but it could be, you know, 10 minutes from now. So, you know, calling senators, calling folks who are decision makers right now is great, but Kavanaugh is going to be moving to a lifetime appointment. Now, there are a number of things that are kind of bubbling up through the surface around Kavanaugh's impeachment, and people who are suggesting that if there is a way to prove that he has been untruthful, then impeachment proceedings can start. I think that that's a long shot at best.
Well, you need 67 senators for that, right?
Exactly. And so it's just, I think, unlikely at best. And so if Kavanaugh is confirmed, then Kavanaugh will be on the Supreme Court. But if you don't want to see this happen again, make sure that you vote. Too many of us think that it doesn't matter, but it really does.
And yesterday we did a show about the Federalist Society, the religious right, and how decades ago they basically set their differences aside and they worked on this issue and they have been so successful. Whereas on the liberal progressive side, they just haven't done that kind of work when it comes to judges and appointing judges. Lee Goodmark, and you can find that at yourcallradio.org. Lee Goodmark is a law professor at the University of Maryland School of Law, an anti-violence advocate, and author of Decriminalizing Domestic Violence. Lee, thanks for your work. I was so troubled when you said that we're going backwards when it comes to anti-violence work, so we'd love to have you back on to talk about that.
I'd love to do that. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you. Michael Stern is an attorney with 30 years of experience as a litigator and 25 years as a federal prosecutor for the U.S. Department of Justice. He also spent 3 years as an assistant district attorney, and you can find his USA Today op-ed called Let the FBI Do Its Job at yourcallradio.org. Michael, thank you for your work, and we'd also love to have you back.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. Thanks to Laura Wenis for producing today's show, and thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.